so he comes to visit sometimes and gives us encouraging words and an encouraging spirit, light-hearted and sincere.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. It's after an introduction like that, it's a little bit you're a little bit put on the spot. I feel I come here to get encouragement and inspiration, and it's wonderful to be here. The building itself is always, to me, very, very impressive. So maybe we can just go, since we are a small group, go around and everybody can say their name, please.
I'm Dan.
Dan. Hi, Dan.
I'm Hel.
And whom?
Samir.
Samir.
Emila.
Emila.
Samia.
Samia.
Kitty.
Kitty.
Britt.
Hi, Britt.
Randy.
I have Randy.
Nadine.
Nadine.
Wendy.
Hi, Randy.
Donald.
Arlene.
Julian.
Hello, Trent. Our common teacher, Coburn Gino, used to like to go around and ask people for their names and to introduce themselves. When we chanted the gatha for opening the sutras or the for the speech, I hadn't chanted it for many years, and I remembered first talk as a shuso in Tassahara many years ago. I was very nervous to talk, and then that sutra sort of, I felt like I had to create some pearls of wisdom that I had to present to live up to the expectation of a sutra like that. Only later did I realize that nothing extra was needed. This wonderful special opportunity to realize that we are life is always present. And to the contrary, very often obscured by the fact because that we look for something special other than what actually is. So, an unsurpassed, perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Our scientific mind, which we are endowed with, which is our lineage and our karma, confirms that. In this vast universe, it's very, very rare to have consciousness, to realize, to be able to realize that we are life, that we are part of a big, mysterious, fantastic happening. Most of the time we are so busy with our daily chores and with our hopes and fears that we forget. And then it is sometimes something, and this is when I drove down with we drove down with Angie, I said, what should we talk about? And she said, well, maybe you talk a little bit about Koban, our teacher, because most people here do not really know Koban or did not meet him personally. But lineage is an interesting thing. We are part of a flow of on all levels. On the physical level, we are part of a continuous flow of life, the tree of life. But also our mental life, our understanding of ourselves is very much part of a greater, of a culture, of a tradition, of a practice. I didn't know Koban for nearly as long as many people like Angie knew, and I have many seniors in this Sangha. And one thing that Koban did not do was talk about other people. So for all these years that we did do things together and traveled together, and I translated him often from English into German, and I was fortunate to be a lot in Dokusan with him to translate, so I experienced him in a lot in that situation, not only just when I was talking with him. But he never talked about other people. So when he died very suddenly, a lot of his old students I never even heard of, because I was in Europe and he had students here in a few I knew, of course. A few came over with him to sit with us in Europe. I was lucky to have, as we all do, I suppose, to have many teachers in this life, known and unknown. Every person we meet is a teacher, and every life situation we meet is really the teaching. But there are some outstanding people that we have for a longer period of time, and Koban was this person for me as a Zen teacher. The other one was Brother David. Some of you know him. He's a Benedictine monk. And everyone has its own little flavor, has its own quality. Koban was a small, skinny man, and but strong, very strong. We did a lot of... he was a good skier. We did a lot of skiing and some mountaineering together, rock climbing. And actually, those were the times I saw him, I feel, most happy. Outdoors, physically engaged. And before he had his second marriage and got children again and got very busy on the home front, he would come over for a long period of time, and we would schedule the session so that we could do some skiing and some mountaineering. Brother David has the word gratefulness. That's his one word that he keeps coming back and turning. Thich Nhat Hanh has the word of mindfulness, which is sort of the basis of all things before you start. Harry Roberts, who was an American Indian teacher in the early days of Zen Center, he said accept. That was his one word. And Koban came always back to me with the word respect. Respect. Approach things respectfully. And I felt that very much always, how he would approach things, or very respectfully. One little story that keeps in very insignificant, but very to me always. We had a dinner. We had lunch in my home, and it was Koban and a few other people, and the kitchen was already. You know, I said I would bring, I don't know, 8 or 10 people, and then we were 12 or 14 people. And well, there was this one lady who sort of wasn't really invited and sneaked in, and she was there, and the kitchen already had a hard time, and I just sort of said, I'm sorry, but there's no space on the table, and I just sort of wanted to get her out. And Koban sort of saw that on the side, and without saying a word, he got out, got her back in, and put her down on the table, and sat her down. Of course, there was enough for everybody, and to not cut anybody out, to not leave anybody out, was an important thing. He had always a heart for sort of the, he was a little bit an outcast himself in many ways within the Zen scene, and he always had a particularly soft spot for the sort of borderline figures, people who had trouble. He was particularly drawn to, and spent time. Trungpa Rinpoche has a son who is mentally retarded. He spent a lot of time with him, and there wasn't any big teaching that said his. If I read his lectures, they are to me unintelligible. It doesn't make any sense. I translated for years, and it was not always easy to translate, but it made sense. It was like a poem, you know, or like a song, the long breaks, and then I didn't want to translate up to that point because that would sort of severe cut the momentum. So you had to wait, and then then something comes out again. And then very often I would ask other people to translate because I couldn't. And it was more his being around, his presence. I felt always very much at ease, much more so than with Brother David. You always have to sort of be on your best behavior because he's always on his best behavior. And you always have to be present because he's always present. With Koban was much more relaxed. Was was okay. You could be goof off, and he would put a blanket over you and make sure. Very often, people in Dokusan would ask complicated, long questions, and he would listen, and he would not answer. He would like adjust the hand mudra at great length, poke around, and. And then get up and do the, and that was it. No answer to the question. It was also, I learned only later on that quite different in the teaching of like what he did in Europe with ordaining people and how he did the sessions, quite different from here. You know, like we would do rather elaborate ceremonies during Sesshin, walking around chanting sutras and doing the Sandokai, and then here I hear he would sometimes just Heart Sutra at the beginning, sitting 7 days, Heart Sutra at the end, and that was it. Or people would come here and beg him to be ordained, and he would refuse. He would apparently, several people I talked to in Europe, he asked me to do the ordination in Europe always. And, you know, there was one woman I remember, I said, I don't feel good about it. She wants to be ordained for all the wrong reasons, and she's too young, and she's not. Da, da, da. Okay, he said, well, if you don't do it, I will do it. Well, that made me feel funny. And then as we enter the same door, he hands me the robe and said, you do it anyway. So. And all the people that, lots of people have come to sit with him and sort of enter this lineage, who do not fit anywhere else. There was basically no requirement made. No requirement. Some personal feeling had to be there. And the rest, really, he said, make it up. Be sincere and be respectful, and then make it up. They said the tradition is... He was a very good calligrapher, and he taught calligraphy class at the beginning. I tried, and he said, you have your own calligraphy. Practice your handwriting, you know. Emila, you know Coburn well. Emila knows Coburn as long as I do, and she was also with us, when Coburn passed on in Switzerland, in my house in the swimming pool, and Emila was there too.
When I think of Coburn, I think that it's true that he was very relaxed about forms, but he was also expressed them in the tradition very fully, and he could train you and teach you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was often said of Coburn, Coburn doesn't show up unless you're dead or dying, but then he would always show up. You could never depend on him to be there just because you invited him. His name is translated as Cloud.
Mm-hmm. Phoenix Cloud.
Phoenix Cloud. But I also think of him as just completely accepting. And somehow you felt whole with him. But not judged. Nothing you did was incorrect. He saw your effort. He confirmed people by just seeing their effort on being. He loved children. He loved taking care of people. He's incredibly kind. And I think of him as a healer.
Mm-hmm.
And he had medicines, different kinds of medicines.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband, who has the disease, he would care for him, he would take care of him. And it was a kind of joy for him to care for people.
Now that you mention it, he carried leaves. The last time I had lots of leaves around, and he told me how to put them on to Lorley's back and whatnot. Now that you mentioned it, I'm taking the, saying that make it up and so forth. But when I visited Bill Kwong last year, Kwong Roshi, he told me that, he learned everything, all the forms from Coburn, and for 7 years he went every weekend, he went and he brought books where he had all notes and written down the details. So Kwong Roshi said it would be his pleasure to, would love to, because he has received him from Coburn, to pass it on to me in that way. But he lives in Sonoma County, I live in Switzerland, and that's like years of weekly, all handwritten and very nicely. But obviously he knew all that very well, and he did ceremonies very elegantly. He was very elegant, I must say. But obviously that's not what he wanted me to learn, at least. We did ceremonies, but simple.
He also trained the monks at Tassajara.
Yeah.
He came early on to the monastery, and it was very important to train the Zen Center monks.
Poor thing, when he came here, he grew up in an old temple family from birth on, all the gongs and bells and temple. Then years of training in Ehechi, and he really wanted to get into America. And the way he told me is that, he arrived at at the airport, was picked up and driven right to Tassahara, into the monastery. with the big difference that it was a mixed, it was male and female, and that was completely new to him, and both in temple life and in monastic life, no women. And so that was, I think, exciting and confusing. And as Blanche said, every other week somebody else announced that they were going to marry Coben. Do you have any questions or anything you want to know? Or lineage is an interesting thing, you know. I think it's very personal. It's very personal. I mean, it's Angie who somehow transmits this way in what she has done a lifelong. She sort of shares with us here, and Coben did that with us, and his teachers did it with him, and this is a very personal passing on, and we are drawn to people that, it's having a teacher is falling, like falling in love a little bit. You go through your first a very romantic phase where you everything is just solves all problems solved, and you finally have found the person that will fix it all, or just in the presence it works all, and then you go through all kinds of things, but it's very personal. It's not something you can read, and so
you know, something else occurs to me when I think about Coben that's so distinctive, and I think very important in his lineage, was that he really didn't want to be a teacher. And I think being in America, where there got to be so much emphasis on being a Zen teacher and being the teacher and finding your teacher, and I think all of the students really felt that from him. Mm. He was, you know, kind of ephemeral and ethereal, and I think he didn't want to have the projections that are especially came from the American students to Japanese teachers and foreign teachers, and I think that was an important, very important part of his presence, was his dealing with what people wanted from him, and the grasping and the projections of how he handled it. I think people were drawn to him because he was working with him.
He avoided it. Almost sabotaged any kind of structure that would build around him. Often he said, stay away from politics. Stay away from politics. When there was...
Great. We both talk again. Brings up that in the last couple of years there's been discussion about, well, you know, this was Coben's idea, or this was Coben's dream, that it should be like this or like this, but so far everyone that I've interviewed or talked with had a different kind of idea about I'm curious if that was really intentional, or if that was just the way that, I mean, and everybody says that I is that how special that when you did show up and he was there with you, you know, how special they felt, and how it almost like some people articulated it really well, but almost like a mirror, that he would shine back who you were, and and believe in what your dreams and intentions were. So do you think overall he had some type of idea? I mean, it really was different in Europe. I mean, when I walk in and saw those big drums and Tukoji's so modest, and it's just very interesting. So it's just not only different from Japan, it was different from, you know, the continents. It's just very...
I'm sure he had his ideas. There was always a school or a kindergarten he dreamt. But basically I found that he was supporting with whatever anybody was doing. In my case, what I was doing with centers, and very much so supported it. He did have that quality that some people have, that get touched with, you know, just by meeting. There are people who were... Brother David is also a person like that. They have some charisma or so that can touch people without any too close a contact, or that feel inspired by it. Not all teachers have that by any means. And not all that have that are but necessarily teachers, but just the quality of being able to touch people deeply. I don't think Coben had master plans of what he was going to... I would not see it that way. He really was sort of bumbling along and improvising as things came up, I think.
I think he also saw that we were getting very rigid in Zen. I don't know if that was your experience, Angie, but, you know, when he had the forms down so far beyond what any of us could possibly do, or, you know, and so then he would say, okay, well, you get a blue robe, you get a black robe, you get a brown robe, right? Quite, you know, what was that about? Just the freedom from when you know the forms so well, not to be caught by them, but to give them out of love, to give something. But not to be so trapped by any meaning. But that's how I felt about it. And of course, I live in Zen Center, where we develop the forms, and, you know, with COVID's help, of course. But I think that was it. So I don't know if he had ideas about it, but I certainly think he intuitively was also trying to free us from that entrapment.
Stir things up a little bit. Yes, yeah, he was good at that.
I love that story where he told, what was her name, the woman, an elderly woman, that told the story. Many years ago, that I guess it was the Shimaru's group, had very clear distinction of who wears a rakusu and what level, that's, you know, like having two stripes and three stars. And so he told this very young student to wear a brocade, golden brocade rakusu for the whole trip that they were doing with him, a 1 month trip through Asia, I think. She said, you wear this rakusu. She said, I should wear it. Yes, you wear this. So she was sticking out there with her brocade, golden brocade rakusu as the new student, and upset everybody, which was, I guess, a little bump into the other teachers. You know, don't take it too seriously.
His students had plans. His students were the ones who were cooking up things. know, getting 501c3 and buying property and asking Kobani to say, that's fine. That's fine. So everybody would say, well, Kobani wants us to do this, and we're doing it Kobani's way. But actually, he just went along with it and supported it as best he could, sometimes from a great distance. So we were always wondering whether it was really okay, but we trusted that he would let us know if it wasn't okay, so he would just go ahead.
And very unpractical in some ways, very un... When he arrived traveling, for especially at the beginning, he got better as he went on, with huge luggage. I mean, Brother David always has this one suitcase, 6 weeks he can carry it, always looks impeccably dressed. He had this huge two loads and the bow sticking out, a long pewter bow, and he had inkstones with it heavy, and then books of Dogen, collected some words of Dogen in there. I said, oh, heavy luggage. Not so practical. Mm. I miss him a lot, I must say. And I do think of him a lot when I hear him or just... But also, I must say, and you were there, the whole event when he passed on had some very peaceful qualities, some very quiet, clear. I feel it was too early and so forth, but some cycles were completed. I think he was in some way ready to go. And I'm sure he's happy to see us all sitting here. He would know us. Sitting, he really trusted. He trusted a lot in sitting.
Thank you
for inviting me.
Thank you so much.